Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of August 2016. Guys, what can I say? We have so few weeks left of summer, and it just so happens that I actually have to bail out of St. John's. Yes, the oldest city in North America will be without its favorite paranormal podcaster. I've got to go, so I had to record this episode of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very early in the month, and I just wanted to say a very special thanks to Laura and Dale. Thank you guys for being on my show. Thank you so much for doing this at short notice. Of course, Laura is the one who brings us the MUFON Minute every show, and Dale Jarvis. He's going to be joining us a little later in the show, Newfoundland folklore specialist, so to speak. When you think about haunted hikes, you think about haunted houses and fairies and goblins and monsters and just plain weirdness in Newfoundland, you got to think about good old Dale and his many, many books that he's authored. So he'll be around a little bit later in the show. Of course, here in Newfoundland, things have gotten a lot hotter lately. What can I say? It's a good thing. Newfoundland is finally in the summer, but man, oh man, is it ever muggy. Whoa, I'm looking at my computer screen right now, and it's practically melting. And let me tell you, that's a far cry from just a few short weeks ago when we were nearly freezing to death. Yes, yes, we actually had frost, but 3 weeks ago. What can I say? There's a lot of strange mysteries surrounding Newfoundland and a lot of weird news, which makes me kind of want to get right into the paranormal news. How about you guys? Are you ready for that? I know I'm kind of rushing along, but I must say I'm kind of pressed for time this month, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to dive right in. I mean, it's got to be done. And if I don't give you guys the paranormal news and I don't give you guys your oddities, it just won't be the same here on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. So let's dig right on in. And as you can tell, I'm not caught in the moment right now. I'm rushing through everything. I'm trying so best to get everything out and on time so that you guys can enjoy it on the 1st of August, but guess what? Some cultures, it's all about the here and the now. And, you know, you kind of want the head of that culture to kind of put you in your place. Well, let me say, well, apparently a chest found in a 1,000-year-old crypt might just contain the head of a certain other religion. Yeah, Buddhism. The discovery was made following an archaeological excavation of a Buddhist temple in Nanjing. Inside, researchers found an ancient stone chest containing an elaborate stupa model, which is a hemispherical structure used to store relics, which was adorned with gold, silver, and gems. An inscription on the chest, which is thought to date back to the Reign Emperor, which is way back in the Song Dynasty, which is AD 997 to 1022, indicated that the remains inside were those of Buddha himself, the man whose teachings became the foundation of Buddhism. It remains unclear, however, if the skull fragment actually is that of Buddha, or if the people who placed it within the chest had simply believed that to have been the case. The inscription, which is written by a man named Deming, contained the words, "The Master of Perfect Enlightenment, Abbot of Changchun Monastery, and the Holder of the Purple Robe." It also goes on to tell the story of how Buddha had been cremated near India's Hiranavadi River, and that his remains had been split up before being distributed around the world. So there you have it. The head of state, so to speak, of mind. Oh, boy. Well, you know, some icons like Buddha, easily recognized. Some other icons, in particular when it comes to, say, Bigfoot, aren't exactly recognized. And Bob Giblin is one of the very few people out there who was involved with Bigfoot that everyone kind of knows. Because, well, as soon as you think of him, you think about the Giblin and Patterson film, which to this day is still one of the most revered pieces of footage of the legendary Sasquatch. But Bob Giblin has been speaking out about the Bigfoot footage as of late. One of the two men who filmed the infamous Bluff Creek Bigfoot video has long regretted his involvement. Filmed in 1967 in Northern California, the Patterson-Giblin film has long remained the most hotly debated and tantalizing piece of footage ever recorded in relation to the Bigfoot phenomenon. The video, which offers a clear view of a large bipedal ape-like creature walking along the creek bed, soon became world-famous and attracted the attention of Bigfoot enthusiasts and critics alike. Patterson himself sadly passed away back in 1972, which means that Bob Giblin, who sold his share of the rights to the film to another researcher for the measly sum of $10, is now the only person left alive who knows what really happened that day. The level of harassment and abuse he has seen since received over the footage, however, has left him wishing that he had never agreed to take part in the original expedition in the first place. "It ruined me," he said. "They doom driving me in my driveway. Like they're everywhere. They come driving me in my driveway all the time, all night, and go, 'Bob, we want to go out Bigfoot hunting. Take us with you.'" My wife was a teller at a savings and loan institution. Of course, she was sitting right there, and the public would come in and make smart remarks to her all day long. This went on and on and on until she came home crying. She'd say, "I'm not tough enough." A couple of times we were going to split up over this. "It just hasn't been great. Despite these problems, however, Giblin has still remained that he knows what he saw that day. I can understand why they don't believe in it, because I don't believe in it either. But I saw one, and I know what I saw, and I know it wasn't a man in a suit. It couldn't have been. I saw it with my own eyes, and I've paid the price over the years." So there you have it. Wow. Bob Giblin speaking out about that footage, and it just goes to show you, you know, just because you make some discoveries, it's not a great thing, especially in this field. There's so many judgmental people. You know, anybody who's involved with paranormal, you probably noticed over the years, are either 100% believers or 100% naysayers. There's very few people in the in-between who kind of look at both sides of things with a skeptical mind. And, you know, it must be very, very hard for someone like Bob Giblin who has that skeptical mind. Because, you know, to this day, he still claims what he saw was very, very real. He knows he did not hoax that. So it must be very hard when people are constantly tormenting him at all times, all hours of the night. Can you imagine people come to you in the driveway asking you to go Bigfoot hunting? I'd be like, man, get a life and go in the woods yourself. Lord only knows I don't want anybody monitoring me. Speaking of monitoring, have you ever heard about UFOs monitoring nuclear sites? You know, this is something that's been going on for a long, long time, decades even. And this next story is kind of imprinted with that idea that maybe perhaps we've actually been looked out for by these aliens, or are they just spying? For decades, military personnel at the U.S. atomic weapons sites have reported sightings of strange objects. UFO researcher and author Robert Hastings has spent nearly 40 years interviewing officers, engineers, and other individuals who have worked on the U.S. nuclear weapons program during the Cold War, a time when sightings of mysterious objects in proximity to sensitive atomic missile facilities were far more common than is generally realized. UFOs have routinely monitored our nuclear power plants dating back for decades and, on occasion, apparently have interfered with the functionality of those weapons as if to interfere with the subject and also interfere with timeline events. According to Walter Levine, a former security officer of the Nevada test site, such objects have witnessed so often that a special team was set up specifically to look for them. "They were all luminous. They were dish-shaped. Some of them were square-shaped," he told Hastings. "We were to pick up a telephone in this little shack. There was no dial tone. It was just strange. Electronics weren't working correctly. We would read off all these coordinates, the direction of the object, etc. Then when we wrote this stuff down on a piece of paper, we were to burn the paper in the trash, throw it in the can, light it on fire in the shack, do not leave with it." In another case, a military photographer described witnessing a strange craft near Vandenberg. "Flying over the Pacific, suddenly this doomed disc came into frame, circled the warhead, which is flying at 8 to 10,000 miles an hour, shot four beams of light straight at it, whereupon the dummy warhead fell into the Pacific Ocean, and the UFO quickly left the vicinity," Hastings said of the incident. In 1992, a stack of files released through the Freedom of Information Act indicated that there had been UFO sightings at every major atomic weapons facility in the U.S. during the 1940s, including over Los Alamos National Lab, where the nuclear bombs were originally designed. Even to this day, the origins and intentions of these mysterious objects remain a total mystery. Let me tell you, I like the idea of having UFOs helping us out, and it just seems to me like if we truly are just a bunch of creatures in a fishbowl, and we're being looked out, kind of looked after by these things that are just not in our realm, that are millions of years more advanced than us, what can I say? It's good to know that they're up there. And if they really are up there, I'm pretty sure they're being covered up. Which brings me to my next story. A UFO cover-up claim surrounds a NASA live feed. The internet has been awash with claims that NASA is covering up evidence of UFOs in Earth's orbit. The live feed, which streams some truly spectacular views outside the International Space Station, might seem innocuous enough, but according to conspiracy theorists this week, these streaming cameras are being conveniently disabled wherever a UFO happens to be passing by. The bizarre claims stem from footage recorded on July 9th, which shows an unidentified object, which is most likely a meteor, appearing in frame just moments before the feed dropped out. Theorists swooped on the incident, claiming that it showed strong evidence that suggests that we are being visited by extraterrestrials and that NASA is going out of its way to cover it all up. Unsurprisingly, however, the feed dropping out is not actually all that unusual or remarkable. The feed is not switched manually, a NASA spokesman told Popular Mechanics. It's all done automatically. There's nobody at a control board. There's no monkeys behind the typewriter, so to speak. We use the space-based data relay network. Please leave us alone and stop bugging us. To which they said it gives us a very good coverage idea, but you do lose signal occasionally. Unfortunately, it's a part of the process, anywhere from a couple of seconds to a couple of minutes. It varies from day to day, in fact, depending on astral weather. If NASA really was attempting to cover up evidence of otherworldly visitors in Earth's orbit, then why show anything at all on that stream? Why even provide a live feed in the first place? It would be fair to say that this particular conspiracy theory has been satisfactorily debunked. Let me tell you, I have a theory myself about all that. You know what? If they were to try to cover up UFOs, they would still put things that aren't UFOs but might be in the media. Perfect example. You ever notice how the media releases movies and stuff like that about strange events all the time? Like, there's always a UFO movie. Just the other day, we had the sequel to Independence Day debut. I mean, think about it this way. If they're constantly putting this stuff out into the media and pulling it, just filling it with propaganda about these subjects, it kind of dulls down the idea that these things actually exist. It makes them part of entertainment culture, not part of a science-driven one that NASA will be going after. So, my opinion, as a humble paranormal investigator, I think there's probably a chance there's life out there, but let's be honest with ourselves. Why the heck would they come to our planet? Makes no sense. I mean, we could hardly even pick out a proper president, let alone take place or be a part of some kind of crazy, large, huge, universal government, so to speak. In fact, we can't even get our origin straight. Yeah, that's right. We can't even figure out where we came from. Well, what if I told you that we may have a new theory about that? And just the other day, we heard the Big Bang may have actually been more like a big bounce. A new study has added weight to the idea that the universe may cycle between expansion and contraction. Most scientists subscribe to the idea that the universe came into being some 13.8 billion years ago, when everything in existence, everything that was, which at the time occupied a single point of infinite density, began to expand at an exponential rate in an event that is commonly referred to as the Big Bang. One alternative theory, however, suggests that rather than springing into existence and expanding indefinitely, the universe instead undergoes alternating periods of expansion and contraction, a concept typically referred to as the Big Bounce. One of the main problems with this idea has been explaining how the universe cycles from one state to another, but now two scientists have put forward the results of a new study which may finally explain how this is possible and could serve to revolutionize our understanding of the universe. The research has been published by Dr. Stephen Guillen from the Imperial College London and Dr. Neil Turok, director of the Perimeter Institute of Theoretical Physics here in good old Canada. He puts forward the notion that when the universe is very small at the end of its contraction cycle, the principles of quantum mechanics could prevent it from collapsing entirely. Quantum mechanics saves us when things break down, said Dr. Guillen. It saves electrons from falling in and destroying Adam, so maybe it could also save the early universe from such violent beginnings and endings as the Big Bang and Big Crunch. So there you have it. Our entire universe is actually a sandwich from UFC, from KFC. I was about to say UFC. Yeah, I'll have some blood doping in my chicken. Yeah, way to go, Brock Lesnar, by the way. You really let us all down. And, 6 degrees of separation. Anybody out there knows Brock? Tell him I'm totally mad at him right now. Stupid millionaire. There's your paranormal news. Yeah, that's all your paranormal news. We may have found the head of Buddha. Yeah, we might have found him in China. Mr. Gimlin is not very happy with the way he's been treated ever since that Bigfoot footage came out, and I can't say I really blame him. We had two UFO stories, one about UFOs monitoring nuclear sites, as well as a UFO cover-up claim surrounding a NASA live feed. And the last news on our paranormal news, of course, was the idea that perhaps we didn't come from a Big Bang, we actually came from a Big Bounce. Every time I hear bounce, I think of the dryer sheet. Does that make me a bad person? Guys, all these stories, every single one of them have been odd to Newfoundland. Okay, we're getting real close. It's almost time for us to get on with our oddities, 10 strange but very true facts about a very odd world. But first, we gotta look to the skies. We gotta put on our tinfoil hats. We gotta put on our I Love Roswell t-shirts and check in with our good friend, Laura Gilbert, and the MUFON Minute. Take it away, Laura.
Thanks, John. Welcome to your MUFON Minute for August 2016. As a follow-up to our update from July, the Alien Cosmic Expo took place June the 24th to the 26th in Brantford, Ontario. In addition to having many experts in the field, this expo held Canada's first public hearing on UFOs. As I mentioned last month, there was a lot of interest in seeing what was to come from this hearing. Luckily, it did not disappoint. Secret UFO files from the North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, were released to the public by Victor Vigiani. These documents appear to confirm, as long suspected, that civilian and military groups have been actively researching and documenting UFOs. These 11 documents, obtained through an Access to Information request, allegedly show that NORAD tracks an average of 1,800 UFOs annually, and they intercept about 75 each year. The scary part of these intercepts means that the fighter jets are not only close enough to make a visual contact, but also close enough to lock onto the targets. The U.S. government has threatened legal action against Vigiani, citing he has committed espionage. Reportedly, he taunts them by saying, "I dare the U.S. government to charge me." The disappointing part of this new information is that very little is divulged about what these objects actually are. Only that they are called tracks of interest or unknown tracks. If this is what is released from 11 documents, we are left wondering the true scope of NORAD's interest and investigation in UFOs. Of course, information deemed sensitive remains blacked out, which is the norm for these type of documents, and this includes the actual accounts of the pilots, so we are left wondering what they have actually seen. Two interesting pieces of information include an air traffic report, and I quote, about an incident in which two Canadian CF-18s scrambled from the Comox Air Force Base, pursued three UFOs at an altitude of 35,000 feet, and gained contact with and engaged the UFOs. Another document highlighted the recovery of a metal fragment, reportedly part of a vehicle that traveled in outer space. If you are interested in more information about these documents, be sure to give it a little Google yourself. Remember, in Canada last year, August was the peak month for all reported UFO sightings. Get out there with your cameras and binoculars, and if there isn't fog or clouds, you could see something very special. If you do, don't forget to report it to www.mufon.com. July 17, 2016 saw the second local MUFON meetup. 11 people were in attendance, and there's lots of energy and excitement about the group. For more information about MUFON in Newfoundland and Labrador, be sure to check out newfoundblog.wordpress.com. and check out the Newfoundland UFO Network group on Facebook. Thank you, John.
Ah, Laura, there's no better thing in the world than to know what's going on around us, and those are some really interesting things. Thank you so much for that MUFON Minute. But now it's time for, you got it, oddities.
Thank God, it's time for oddities.
Alive, it's alive, it's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddity.
10 very strange facts that are very true about a very odd world. Did you know, when Twister was introduced back in 1966, it was denounced by critics as sex in a box? Yeah, hear that? It was sex in a box. All I can think about is Justin Timberlake on Saturday Night Live. Honest to God. Oh, here's something that'll make your skin crawl. Did you know that there are more life forms living on your skin than there are people on the planet? That's disgusting. Makes you want to wash like extra hard, maybe with a sandblaster or something. Oh, you know what's really cute? Otters. Otters are so cute. And did you know that otters sleep holding hands? Aww. Take a life lesson from the otter. Hold your one you love very close tonight as you slowly drift away on the water. Did you know O.J. Simpson was originally cast to play Terminator, but the studio was afraid that no one would buy him as a remorseless killer? Like, oh God, okay, you know, I'll just go ahead and say it. If the glove fits, man. If the glove fits. Did you know that Leonardo da Vinci could write with one hand and draw with the other at the same time? Now that is some crazy facts. But you know what? I'm not that impressed because I can do that and eat cereal with my foot. Yeah, I said it. I can do it. Did you know the last man to walk on the moon, Gene Cernan, promised his daughter he'd write her initials on the moon? He did, and her initials, TDC, will probably be on the moon for tens of thousands of years. Wow. I mean, that is amazing. Me, personally, I probably would have put the Konami code up there. Yeah. Did you know the mimic octopus can not only change colors, but will mimic the shapes of other animals like the flounder, lionfish, and sea snakes? And let me tell you, they're a dead ringer. I've seen these things in action before. Oh, God. This is another one of those gross ones. Are you ready? Did you know 20% of office coffee mugs contain, bum, 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 fecal matter? Yeah. Dude, this coffee tastes like crap. Now you know why. Can you remember Austin Powers when he drinks the stool sample? Oh, Basil, this coffee tastes like shit. It is shit, Austin. Did you know if you were to remove all the empty space from the atoms that make up every human on Earth, the entire world population could fit into an apple? Yeah, that's a pretty sad state of affairs right there. You are literally full of hot air. And one last oddity for you guys before I leave you. In the 1960s, the CIA tried to spy on the Kremlin and Russian embassies by turning cats into listening devices. The program, called Acoustic Kitty, involved surgically implanting batteries, microphones, and antenna inside cats. Wow, that's pretty darn amazing. Of course, the Allies will get back. You want to know how? I'll tell you how. Yup. Dogs. Yup. Dogs chase them all away. Definitely. Acoustic Kitty. What an awesome name for a band. I wonder if there's one out there. Guys, I got Dale Jarvis coming up next. I hope you enjoyed all your interesting facts, those crazy oddities. I hope you loved them. And don't you dare go away.
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast does not accept donations. In lieu of this, the Stella Burry Foundation is a registered charity established in 2005 to secure financial support for the work of Stella's Circle. Learn more and please give generously at stellaburry.ca. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast. Tonight's guest is a repeat guest. I haven't talked to him in well over a year. Of course, if you remember, two Christmases ago, I had this guy on talking about the ghostly mummers and whatnot. Tonight's guest is somebody who, when I think of folklore in Newfoundland, or when I think of haunted houses, or when I think of ghost stories, or my personal favorite, when I think of the haunted hike, oh yeah, I think of Dale Jarvis. Dale, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Nice to talk to you again.
Listen, man, I love repeat guests. My audience love repeat guests, especially guests who got a lot to say. And last time you were on, we talked so much about your, I believe it was your last book you published. What was it again? It was the Mummer. It was
Any Mummers Allowed In. Yeah. The book on the history of mummering in Newfoundland. Yeah.
And it was pretty much just an excuse to put the Mummers Dance on my podcast, but it's a great book.
Thanks.
Dale, I know there's so much going on. I gotta ask you, how's the hobby horses going, buddy?
Hobby horses are good. Yeah, they're good. They're good. They're all in hibernation now that Christmas is over, but I'm sure they'll come out again for Christmas time.
Oh, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you in that Mummers Parade again this year.
Yeah, oh, it's always great fun. I mean, it keeps getting bigger every year, and people love it. It's become something of a tradition now in downtown St. John's. You know, people look forward to it. There's a whole new generation of kids that are growing up going to the Mummers Parade every year, which is great. That'll keep that tradition going for another generation now.
And Lord only knows we need more haunted stories about ghosts here in Newfoundland, especially ones of the horse variety, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We love those.
Absolutely.
We love those. Dale, it feels like it's been an eternity since we spoke, but believe it or not, it's only been about 16 episodes ago. So there you go. It's really not that long ago. So what have you been up to since last time you were on the podcast?
Gosh, it's been busy. I've been flat out, as they say. Just there's always something. You know, I have the ghost kind of business that happens. That's basically a summer and Halloween gig. But I work full time for the province doing heritage work. So that's busy. Heritage is really important here. Heritage and culture is a part of who we are, and there's always something new to do.
Yes, and which brings up, of course, something I got to talk about, because if you're a fan of heritage and you're a fan of Newfoundland, or dare I say you may even be a Newfoundlander yourself and you want to know more about the heritage of Newfoundland and hear about it from people right from their own mouths, Dale has started his own podcast, ladies and gentlemen, called the Living Heritage Podcast. Right, Dale?
That's correct. Yeah, Living Heritage. That's it.
That's so exciting, because like I've always looked at the whole ghost hunting thing that I do as, you know, the on living heritage.
Yeah. Undead heritage. Yeah.
If you don't have me on, if you don't have me on Halloween this year, I'm gonna be so depressed. You gotta have me on. I've already got like two podcasts lined up for Halloween time, so I'm looking forward to that. If we can get at it. But tell me a little bit about the Living Heritage. You know, I like to say cheap plug, but I want to know.
Yeah.
I do want to know more about that podcast and why you started it.
You know, I meet so many interesting people when I'm out doing heritage work, and meet lots of people that are really kind of keeping heritage alive. And that was the idea behind the podcast. We wanted to interview people who are kind of doing things that promote heritage and culture. So we have a whole range of different people that we bring on. It's a half hour podcast. We try to put it out every week or so. I think we've recorded up to episode 50 now, I think, because it's been basically a year since it's been started. So we talk to people who are, you know, professionals maybe in the heritage sector, like people like museum people. I just did a great interview with Philip Hiscock, who's one of my favorite folklorists. He used to run the folklore archives at Memorial. We had a great chat all about great old Newfoundland words. We talked about what skeets are and what a bye is and all that kind of stuff and where those words kind of fit into our culture. But then we bring in other people too. Like we've done some great interviews with, you know, just people who grew up in Outport, Newfoundland, and we have chats about that. We've had people on from Labrador. We had one of our most popular podcasts. We interviewed two Memorial University students who are from Iran, and we just talked about Iranian culture and humor and that kind of stuff. So it was great. We talk about all kinds of things. We talk about food. We talk about knitting. You name it. If it's about any kind of heritage or culture, we'll have a chat.
See, that's awesome. And I'm just so glad that you've found yet another way to share your lovely brain with the world, because you know what?
Yeah.
I'm a Dale Jarvis fan. There we go. I said it. I'm not a Dale Jarvis-aholic. That's not until you get into wrestling. But what I will say is this. I got a couple of your books, and you know, it's just so great to catch up with you and know that you're still doing things for folklore. And I think that's so interesting that you've now taken the modern approach. Because to me, podcasting, it's only really been around for about 10 years. It's still relatively new. So it's good to see you taking it in new avenues. And, you know, we look around our province. We know things are changing. You know, some people wouldn't say for the better. I like to think that it will change. It will get better. And knowing there's an audio footnote for Dale out there, it's just great. I love to, I like to tell people, you know, one of the first times I ever met Dale was many, many, many years ago. And he was standing at the church steps and he said, pay your shillings. We're going on a ghost hunt with the Haunted Hike. Dale, we don't, we never really had a chance to really dive into the Haunted Hike. How has that been going this year?
Man, it's been going well. You know, like, we're having a better summer this year, weather-wise, than we had last summer. Last summer, you know, 2015 was a terribly cold summer. So the weather, the weather's actually been pretty nice this summer, which is great. But ironically, you know, I'm probably the one tourism business in the province where a cold, foggy, miserable night is actually not bad for business. You know, it's atmospheric when people can come out in those conditions and listen to a ghost story. Not many businesses can say that, that work outdoors, that a bit of fog is a good thing, but it certainly is for us.
I got to agree there. You know, you got to wonder, are their teeth chattering because they're scared to death, or is it because it's actually -2? -2 in the middle of July. Good Lord, we had frost last week. We had frost. We're like more Arctic now than we've ever been.
But it has been good, you know, and we have a real mix of people who come on the Haunted Hike. We have locals, certainly. Like, I'm always getting new locals who haven't been on the hike before, but we get a lot of tourists. You know, it's a great way for tourists to explore a bit of the historic part of downtown St. John's. They get to see things that maybe they wouldn't normally get to see. They get to see some of the back alleys. They get a little bit of history with their horror. And they get to kind of see things that even sometimes that locals don't know. You know, I've had people come on the tour and then say to me afterwards, you know, I grew up in St. John's and I had never been down that back alley, or I had never heard that story before. And I love that. I love being able to show people who live here kind of that hidden part of their heritage and culture.
Newfoundland after dark, so to speak.
Yeah.
Dale, why don't you give us an example of one of your favorite stories from the Haunted Hike? Now, I've been on the Haunted Hike 3 times, and I'm ashamed to say I haven't been on it in a couple of years now, but I guess when you're living and breathing the Haunted Hike yourself every day, you don't really get a chance to get down to that old church, but, you know, the stories have changed over the years. There's different things going on. I know that you try to have a different hike every year, Dale. So I want to know, what stories will you be getting into this year if the brave souls who are listening to this podcast do decide to show up?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I think about what stories we're going to tell, and we kind of switch it up a little bit. And I have a couple different guides that now work with me and for me. And we all kind of have our own favorite stories. And so the depending on what night you go and which tour guide you have, you might get a slightly different version of a new story. And you know, sometimes we learn, we add in a new story, we phase out an old story, we kind of switch stuff up. And I just this year I've started to put back in an old story that I hadn't been telling for a while. But I like the location where it's told, and it's a great story. So I started telling it again. And it's an old story. It was a story that was recorded by a fellow by the name of P.K. Devine. He was I guess what you would call an early folklorist. I think he was actually a lawyer or a legal secretary or something by trade, early part of the 20th century, but he had a passion for Newfoundland history and culture, and he collected stories, and he wrote little booklets and sold these booklets of Newfoundland, you know, stories and superstitions and folk songs, kind of an early collector of Newfoundland folklore. And he had this story about a building that was called the Foreigns Hotel. And that was a hotel that stood in the 1800s at some point. And there is some sense that it may have stood on the piece of land that's now occupied by the post office building on Water Street. And the story was that the hotel had a strange knocking noise that could be heard from one of the upper rooms in the hotel. This knocking noise would be heard throughout the apartment, and nothing could be found to explain the strange sound. It happened once, it happened twice, it happened 3 times. The hotel was close to ruin. The reputation was close to being ruined. The rumors were spreading around. This was a haunted hotel. So they set a double guard at the room's entrance, And that night, the knocking ceased. It wasn't heard. So they locked the door, and they didn't use that hotel room again. And it kind of faded. Memory of it faded. Life returned to normal. Business returned to normal. And months went past. One night, a strange man, a stranger to everyone, arrived at the foreign hotel, and he demanded lodging for that evening. Now, at that point, the hotel was fully booked. Every room in the hotel was occupied, every room except one room, the room that had been locked all those months before. And not wanting to send him to a rival hotel, and thinking that, well, there hasn't been a disturbance in so long, it'll be safe, they unlocked the door, they gave the man the key, and they checked him into the room. Now, he retired to the room, and that night, later that night, at the same time when the knocking had been heard earlier, the knocking returned. But this time, P.K. Devine writes, in a long and insistent furor of wrath. And so the guests and staff rushed to the hotel. Room, there was no answer from within. The door was locked. They had to break down the door. And when they did, they found the mysterious stranger, fully dressed, lying on the bed, and cold in death. A doctor was called for. He came and he examined the body, and he said that the man had died from massive internal hemorrhaging. And when the body was removed from the building the next day, a distinct knocking noise could be heard throughout the building, which persisted until the very moment that the corpse was removed from the building. Now, the equally mysterious part of the story is that the stranger was never identified. No one came forth to claim his body. No one knew who he was. And there was, at that point, an old cemetery at the bottom of Long's Hill and Queen's Road. There were actually two cemeteries there. There was one kind of under where the kirk is now, the Presbyterian Church. There was a Roman Catholic cemetery there, but across from where the theater pharmacy is now, there's a little kind of traffic island park. And in that area somewhere, there was an old Methodist graveyard. And so this stranger was buried there. His corpse was never identified. And people, I think, would have forgotten this story if P.K. Devine hadn't written it down. So I always like where I can to kind of bring the story up to date and figure out if there's another piece. So there was this story that had been written over 100 years ago. And so one day, and this was a couple of years ago, I was down at the post office building checking mail, and I just got chatting with someone who worked in the post office building, and I said, you know, are there any stories about this building? And they said, oh yes, Bob. He said, there's a ghost here, but I don't believe much in that. And I said, oh, what was the story? And he said, oh, one of the rooms up in the upper stories, someone was working late one night, and they said they could hear a strange knocking noise in one of those rooms up there. So I figured, oh, that's perfect. That's the story come full circle from the past to the present.
I gotta love it. And you can just see how anybody who's got headphones in right now, that's listening to that podcast, you can hear Dale's voice. You can just say that's not the first time he's told that story. And
No, I can't even count how many times I've told that story. But for a while I wasn't telling it, and I'd forgotten how much I liked it. So I'm delighted to have it put back on the tour now.
I'm so glad no one decided to knock on the door of my spooky closet right now, because I definitely would have jumped out of my boots, right? Okay, Dale. So the Haunted Hike, it's time to promote it, man. When is this thing going on? Because there might be people out there who don't know about this. So yeah, what time of night is it?
There are people who don't know about it. The hike runs every Sunday to Thursday evening from July to mid-September. And it starts at the Anglican Cathedral, which has its own ghost story, by the way. The Anglican Cathedral on Church Hill. It starts at 9:30. We meet at the stone steps on Church Hill, and it's $10 per person. And we come for about an hour and a quarter, and we take you around. We bring you back safely where you started, and you hear lots of great ghost stories. And we actually have two different hikes that run. There's a Sunday Monday tour, which is a little bit more gruesome, features more stories that are about true crime and murders and executions, torturing, that kind of stuff. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is our kind of our classic ghosties and ghoulies tour, the more kind of paranormal. So you can come twice a week if you want and hear different stories. A similar route, same starting spot, but yeah, slightly different stories. Now, and I say that the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday is a little bit more family friendly. So for, I usually say kids 8 and up, they're fine. They can come and they can hear some great ghost stories.
Yeah, and I hear that now, guys. Now listen, I'm not speaking from experience. Okay, maybe I am, but listen, you take your girlfriend out on this. This is the best thing you could ever do. She's going to do nothing but cuddle into you and shiver the entire time.
There you go. Perfect.
Even if it is 30 degrees out.
Yeah.
Dale, you kind of almost told us a ghost story about Anglican Cathedral. Now, I've heard one myself concerning a certain picture, and I don't know if that's the one you're about to talk about, but...
Yeah, so this is probably one of the better-known ghost stories, I think, in St. John's.
Absolutely.
Because it is fairly well documented. I mean, you can go into the cathedral itself and see this famous ghostly photograph. In the cathedral itself, which is well worth people seeing. Like, so many people drive past it and have never been inside that building. It's quite remarkable. It's a stunning building inside. It's Gothic Revival style of architecture. One of the best examples of Gothic Revival style architecture we have in North America. And in the summer months there is a little museum of sorts that's on the main level. So you come in on the main level, and in the south transept there is a tiny museum with, you know, interesting things about the history of the cathedral, and then on one wall a photograph. And the photograph is interesting in that it's taken from down on Duckworth Street, looking kind of up the hill towards the cathedral. Looking across the graveyard up towards the cathedral, and there is a line of men kind of in the foreground, fairly well-dressed men. And then at the end of the line is this other ghostly figure of a man in working clothes, kind of half transparent. The story, the legend, is that a workman was crushed to death, that he died after falling from the south face of the cathedral, which is quite a height. The roof is has a very steep slope, and he fell from the roof and perished. And the story was that at the end of that phase of construction of the cathedral, because it was constructed in several different pieces, that this line of workmen stood up in their Sunday best to have their photograph taken, and their deceased companion decided to put in an appearance and appear at the end of the line of workmen. And you can go in and you can see this photograph, the photograph itself. Now, depending on who you talk to, there are different opinions about what this is. Some people will look at it and say, oh, it's a good example of kind of an incomplete exposure, that there was a line of men and there was this other man that had kind of tacked himself on and that they shooed him away. Because you have to remember that photographs took a while in those days to be processed. They had to be exposed. So you would open the camera aperture and you would have to stand perfectly still for a minute, and then they would close the aperture again. And so someone moved before the camera was finished being, before the photograph was being finished. That's one explanation. I remember speaking years ago with Julia Matheson, who was for many, many years the cathedral archivist. And she claimed that there was no record of a man dying during the construction. And so she said, oh, well, maybe she didn't really believe that this was the spirit of a deceased workman. So it's one of these instances where I present the information to you, and then you have to decide for yourself which way you lean. Are you a skeptic or are you a believer? And you can decide for yourself. And if you want, you can go in during the summer months when the museum is open, and you can have a look at the photo and decide for yourself if it's a ghost or not.
Well, let me tell you, right now I'm tied up with another museum, which is Admiralty House Museum in Mount Pearl.
Yes.
And but once that saga is complete, I would love to go to the Anglican Cathedral and maybe try to contact that spirit. Because let me tell you, I got the gear to do it. The question is, will they let me in?
The other space that's near there that has all kinds of ghost stories associated with it, right across the street on the other side from where we start the hike is Cathedral Street, and then you have the red brick Masonic Temple.
Oh, yeah. And
many, many ghost stories building.
Just recently, a couple of shows ago, I had Professor Kenny on, and he was well-versed about that place. Of course, he's a Freemason and used to have meetings there and stuff like that. But, man, oh, man, what an awesome guest that was. And he talked all about that building, actually, and some of the weird stuff that happened in the bar. But if you got any other ghost stories you want to talk to me about that, man, I'd love to hear them.
Yeah, there's all kinds of that whole area there is I think there's just been so much history and so much change over the year. You know, the history of great fires and so many buildings being burned down and then replaced. The other place that we used to tell a story about that we have changed the tour around a little bit, so we don't anymore, is the building right on the corner of that street on Cathedral Street, the bottom of Cathedral and Duckworth Street, which used to be called Victoria Station. And there's been a succession of restaurants and whatnot in there. I think right now it's the Reluctant Chef is the business that's located in the building now. And that building has a very long history of ghost stories, all kinds of ghost stories for that building. Years ago, I'm sure you remember the television show Creepy Canada.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was one of the locations where they filmed when they were filming here. The producer of that show, coincidentally, was a Newfoundlander. Brian O'Day was a Newfoundlander. And so we had a good representation on Creepy Canada of local ghost stories. But that old building at Victoria Station there was definitely one that was one of the more haunted buildings in downtown St. John's.
So exciting to know that this living heritage could still be living even after they're dead.
Yeah.
Dale, tell me a little tiny bit what the future holds for Mr. Jarvis here. Any new books on the horizon, maybe?
I always have things that I'm interested in researching. I've got a whole bunch of stories that I was writing. I wrote for about 10 years. I wrote a column called Newfoundland Unexplained for the Telegram. And they changed their format. I haven't been writing for them for a couple of years, but I have a bunch of material that I haven't really published anywhere else yet. So I think there's probably going to be a book version of Newfoundland Unexplained at some point. It might be that title or it might be something different, but that's definitely something that I have in my back pocket. But the other thing that I would love to do a bit more research and write about is our incredibly rich fairy tradition.
Oh yeah.
In Newfoundland. I love fairy stories, and you know, I'm passionate about ghost stories, but I actually think in Newfoundland anyway that our fairy stories can be even creepier than our ghost stories. The fairies in Newfoundland are not nice, pleasant, you know, fairies dancing at the end of the garden kind of fairies. They're they're very mischievous, and they can be quite vicious at times too. So I'd love to do a book on that. It was a great book that came out years ago. Barbara Rietti wrote a book called Strange Terrain, which is a great book on fairy traditions. But I'd love to do more, because I know there's still lots of fairy stories out there.
Well, Dale, now you know what question is coming next. Dale, before you go, can you tell me a quick fairy story?
Man, there's so many. You know, I spend a lot of time in Conception Bay. My wife's from Clark's Beach area. And there's lots of great fairy stories from that area. There's a remarkable story that a woman, Linda Suley, told me. She worked for years as an interpreter at the Hearts Content cable station and had worked for the Baccalieu Trail Heritage Corporation. Years ago, they had done an oral history project and had interviewed a whole bunch of seniors in the area. And she told me a story that she had learned from an older lady in North River, which is just north of Clark's Beach, between Clark's Beach and Bay Roberts. And it was a story about a man who had gone out cutting wood. And when he didn't come home, his wife got worried. It was in kind of the winter of the year. And she sent someone out looking for him because it was getting dark. And they found him on the slide that he had. This horse was there, and there's wood on the slide, and he was on top of it dead. And they brought him back to the house, and they waked him, and they buried him in the old cemetery in North River. And people said that he had been killed by the fairies, because when they found him, there was burned into the side of his face a tiny little red handprint. And people always said in the community that he had been killed by the fairies. And what was interesting, Linda told me this story, and all the oral history records were being stored in Carbonier, all the tapes, the original tapes with these things in it. And she said, I'm going to find that story for you. And she went to look at the tapes, and all the tapes were there, except for one tape, the tape that had this story of the strange man that had been killed by the fairy. All the tapes were there except the one which had that one story on it. So she always said the fairies didn't want that story to be told. So we'll see what happens to this podcast now. And see if the fairies exact vengeance in any way.
Oh, my God. As soon as I hang up the phone with you now, I'm going to hear a little pitter-patter through my kitchen. I can see it now.
Don't let them touch your face, that's all.
Dale, if people wanted more information about your books you've published, about the Haunted Hike, and all the other, the plethora of things that you've got yourself into, where can they find that information online?
They can go to a couple places. They can certainly go to hauntedhike.com. That's where all the information about the Haunted Hike and our other program, the Ghost of Signal Hill program, all the information that they need to know is there. Or you can just look for me, Dale Jarvis. DaleJarvis.ca. I've got a blog where I often post local ghost stories. Or just find us on Facebook. You can look for Dale Jarvis, or you can look for The Haunted Hike, and you will find us, and chances are there will be a story that goes along with it.
Oh, Dale, thanks so much for being on tonight. It means the world to me. It means a lot to the people out there who listen to the podcast. They know that as soon as Dale Jarvis comes on this podcast, they're going to have a great time.
Thank you, buddy. It's been great.
And I hope I get a chance to talk to you again soon. And once again, guys, check him out online. Get out to the Haunted Hike. Get your ladies, get your gentlemen. Bundle up cold. It might be freezing. Who knows? It's the middle of summer. It's Newfoundland. You might freeze to death. But I'll tell you one thing. You won't be bored. Get out to the Haunted Hike. Check him out. It's Dale Jarvis, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for being on, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. Drop a like. And every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast, as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.